Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. I am your host for today, Kate Carter.
And I'm Kylie Colwell.
And that's it, ladies and gents. It's just the two of us. Holly, miss you, love you. If it's cool with you, Kylie, we're just going to jump right in for today's case. It's a little bit of a long, it's a longer one. I feel like I tend to do a little bit of long ones, but sometimes they can be longer, sometimes they can be short, depending on how fast I talk.
If I get up and leave to grab a glass of wine, it's getting
Yeah,
long. I'll
it's
let you
getting too
know.
long. Okay, that's like my warning, my time warning.
Yes.
Okay, I promise you, this is a good story today. I knew this dude's name and I knew like what led to the events of the case, but I never really looked up all the details and I definitely didn't know like the background on it. So it was definitely a fun one for me to do. I enjoyed the research on it. Let's get started, ladies and gents. Today's case, this is the Drew Peterson case. We're in October 2007. In a small town called Boiling Brook, Illinois, a 23-year-old mother of four named Stacy Peterson has gone missing. Boiling Brook, Illinois is a suburb of Chicago. It takes about 45 minutes to get there. Though Stacy wasn't reported missing until October 29th by her sister, it was assumed she had actually gone missing the day before, and that was due to her husband's account of the last time he spoke with her. So let me tell you about Stacy. Stacy Ann Kales, that was her name when she was born on January 20th, 1984, and she's from Illinois. She's from DuPont. Stacy had a pretty unusual upbringing, as a lot of people in most of our cases do, and it wasn't really the best. Her mom met her dad when she was underage. They waited till she was 21 to get married. The two of them had three kids together. Their home burned down. One of their kids was killed in the fire. And then after that baby died, the mom filed a restraining order against the dad. I mean, it was basically a shit show. And then Stacy was born. So she kind of like was raised by what was already a shit show of a family happening. So it ended up with Stacy and three siblings and their mom. The dad was kind of off like being, a douche. And unfortunately, Stacy's mom had a lot of mental issues. And she at some point got admitted to a psych hospital. And then while she was in the psych hospital, she gave birth to another child. So this woman was just popping out babies. But this kid also died as well. It passed away while she was in the psych hospital. There's too much trauma.
Yeah, I was just about to say that is a lot of trauma very quickly.
Yes. Yeah. The mom is like early 20s when all of this is happening. So she has a ton of kids, lots of deaths, horrible husband. After that baby died, Stacy's mom pretty much went completely nuts. She started committing crimes, got arrested, alcoholic, neglected the kids. The dad came back into the picture. But get this, when Stacy's dad came back in the picture, he only adopted three of the four kids because the fourth kid wasn't his. And so he said he wasn't taking on that child. And so that kid went to state foster care. It just kind of shows you. Like Stacy had a hard upbringing, basically. So when Stacy was 14 years old, her mom went missing. And to this day in 2025, no one ever knows where she went.
There's a lot to unpack already.
Yes. That could be, I honestly could have just done a whole case on that, I feel like. But Stacy did really well for herself. She graduated high school at 16 years old. She was very into academics. She started taking online nursing classes and was living by herself. So in order to pay rent, she started working at a local hotel. It was right outside of the town of Boiling Brook. And that was basically for her to make the income to be able to do school and rent. And while working at the hotel, she was 17 years old at the time, Stacy met a man named Drew Peterson. So, Mr. Peterson, Drew Peterson was born in Boiling Brook in 1954, so quite a bit before Stacy. He graduated in high school where he met his first wife. So they ended up becoming high school sweethearts. They got married after graduation, had two kids together. And at some point, Drew went to the army. I couldn't figure out what year it was, but he joined the army. I want to say it was probably pretty much right after high school. In the army, he became an MP. He was a military police officer. Anytime I knew someone in the army in particular, and it was so they were a military police officer, it was like not the best person. So that's just kind of the rep that they all get. And as you will learn in this case, I assume Drew fit right into that mold.
I can assume people just thought of them as like snitches.
Yeah. In the army, in the military.
Yeah, we're supposed to be brethren.
Right. Yeah. Brethren. So Drew only spent a few years in the army, left in 77, moved back to Boiling Brook and did what a lot of military people have done and became a police officer. After a year of training, he was assigned to the undercover narcotics unit, which is really cool. And he pretty much stayed in that field for the rest of his career. But like overall, Drew was known to be this super cocky, douchey kind of guy. He was very out there. He was in your face, obnoxious. Like this is just, and he knew he was this way. Like he would describe himself this way. Because of his role at work being undercover, he spent a lot of his time away from his family. That was like, okay, because he was doing this cool job. And, you know, unfortunately, it was also known, not only was Drew a douchey type of person, but that he often cheated on his wife, in particular with much younger women. And when I say much younger women, I'm talking like teenagers.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. Which is mind-blowing because obviously, first of all, legal, illegal. But second of all, he's an officer. So if people knew that this was happening, there comes like the cover-ups in our police force kind of thing, you know? In 1980, Carol divorced Drew, but you'll find out later, he pretty much stayed in her life for the rest of her life. The same year, Drew was actually kicked off the narcotics unit. He went behind his boss's back and apparently arrested a guy who was like not supposed to be arrested. I assume he was probably like a CI or something like that. And he arrested this dude and he planted drugs on him. So like he was purposely trying to get this guy arrested that wasn't supposed to be arrested. I don't know. It just said whatever he did, he got kicked off of his unit and he got put on desk duty.
I mean, everything about this guy already sounds terrible. So to right. desk duty it is.
Yeah, you deserve it, Drew. And while doing his desk duties, about 2 years after being divorced, Drew met and married another woman very quickly. Her name was Vicky, and Drew was 29 at the time, and she was 23. So not a huge age difference. On a positive note, these two ended up staying together for a good chunk of time before Vicky divorced him 10 years later. And that was because of the same old. He was a douche, partied, cheated. Everybody knew it. It was a very open thing. But this time, Drew had been having a full-on affair with another girl named Kathleen. So Vicky and Drew divorced. Drew married new girl Kathleen in a few months after their divorce. So he happened. Remember him and Vicky had been together for 10 years. So Drew is now 38 years old and his new wife, Kathleen, is 28. So we're starting to get a little bit bigger age gaps, right? That's still acceptable to me. I'm fine with that. But we're going to keep going with those age gaps. So during this marriage to Kathleen, which was his third, Drew had two kids from his first marriage and ended up having two more with Kathleen. And during this marriage, I guess some like side business that Drew had like wasn't doing so good. And he became like just angry. So along with how horrible of a person he was also very angry all the time. He was also slowly approaching his 50s and wasn't able to like do undercover work anymore. And so the department ended up releasing him from his desk job and put him on night watches. And he was the captain of the night watches, which is a great title, but also what a horrific job to have, which also meant he would work at night and sleep during the day. So he was pretty much like not in his family's life at all. In 2001, Drew and Kathleen, for some reason or another, went to a hotel in Boiling Brook for a night. And at that hotel, this is where Drew met a young girl named Stacy. And this is the first time that Drew and Stacy had ever met each other. And to keep in mind, at this point in our story, Drew is 48 years old and Stacy is 17.
Ooh, alarm bells.
Yeah. So now we're getting into an uncomfortable age gap. It was after this first meeting that Drew basically fell head over heels for underage Stacy. And he began visiting the hotel almost daily to see her. So fucking creepy. But Stacy was like totally into the age gap. She thought Drew was mature, older dude, financially stable, like could provide her a good life. And so the two began secretly seeing each other. And just remember, Drew's still married to Kathleen. And Drew at some point went off and bought an apartment for Stacy to live in, which was apparently down the street from his family home. So no biggie at all. But Drew didn't want Stacy to work at the hotel anymore. So he got her a job working in the city and would visit her like as much as he could. But often, as it goes, the two of them wanted to see each other more. And so in order to do this, he's still married. She's a bebe. Drew decided to build a room in his basement. Yep, you heard me. His family home's basement. Apparently it was like an unfinished basement. And Drew kept a heavy lock on that door leading from the basement to the main floor of the house. And from what I could find, Drew told his wife, Kathleen, and like their kids that his police weapons and documents were in the basement. And so that's why no one's ever allowed down there. But in reality, it was Stacy. Was it the 17-year-old girl he's hooking up with is living in your basement?
Why is she in the basement if she has an apartment?
I assume they got rid of the, like, they wanted to see each other every day. And so I don't know why he wouldn't just go to her apartment instead of now sneaking off to the basement. Yeah. And Kathleen, like his wife, had no idea the whole time. Like, she literally had no idea.
Yeah, none of this makes sense to me other than you want to keep a girl locked in your basement.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me too. So fast forward about 4 months, Stacy's still chilling out in the basement. Drew's still cheating on his wife. And he keeps telling Stacy that he's going to divorce her soon. But like, apparently that wasn't a thing. Kathleen receives a letter in the mail, like a physical letter. And this letter talks about Drew having an affair, basically brings everything to the table for Kathleen. And like, we have no idea to this day, we have no idea who it's from, which is actually a big deal, as you'll see later in the story. I have this letter, so I'm going to read it to you. Juicy, juicy. Quote, at this point in time, you're probably well aware that your husband is having an affair. The girl's name is Stacy Yelton, which is the wrong last name, by the way. She was born on July 17th, 1984. Also the wrong birth date, but the correct year. And you may already have all this information, but if not, you will need it to prevent any further embarrassment and disgrace to you and your family. This affair has been going on for several months and several people have made aware of the situation. Because of her age at only 17 years old and the fact that she's an employee of the town, and because of Drew's age and occupation, he's holding a position of authority over her. Drew could be charged with criminality for his intimate involvement with this minor. Town officials, the mayor, trustees, and everyone at the police department have complete knowledge of this situation. It has been an ongoing joke within the department. This issue has been discussed, and it has been decided to conceal this behavior in order to protect the town. Kathleen, this is not the first time in the past year that Drew's immoral and unethical behavior has been concealed. The past summer, Drew allowed the beating of an arrestee who was handcuffed and defenseless. This past fall, Drew planted cocaine during two drug raids in order to obtain an arrest so that he could prove himself from his recent behavior. Drew has been willing to sacrifice his integrity for personal gain with total disregard that his actions will embarrass and disrespect his wife and children. Kathleen, be aware who you talk to within the town, especially the administration, police department, mayor, chief of police, deputy of police, etc. You need to protect yourself and your family. End quote.
And my first thought was, okay, maybe Stacy wrote the letter and she gave a fake last name and birthday to be like, oh, I didn't write it. Like, those are wrong. But then the cop information, I don't think she would know about.
No, because when I first saw the letter, I was like, oh, it's probably like some girl he's hooked up with, before, you know, or it's Stacy. But when I kept reading it, I was like, it is 100% someone in the police department.
Yeah, no one else would know that information because he's not telling people he planted evidence or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And someone in the department. And because, and you know, I'm being a little sexist here, because of the stuff that was said in the letter, I also think it was a female that probably wrote it and was like, woman to woman, you need to know this shit.
That is definitely a woman to woman message.
100%. Yeah. So, obviously, as you can imagine, Kathleen got that letter in the mail and she was fucking livid. And so she immediately, clap, 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 got a divorce attorney and filed for divorce. But during the divorce process, Kathleen began asking for things, as you would in a normal, like, divorce process, that were, like, kind of big for Drew. Like, she wanted half of his pension whenever he retired. And she also wanted full custody of the kids, which she kind of deserved. But as you can imagine, Drew, in his douchiness, was not going to allow any of that. And in fact, he wanted to just piss Kathleen off, like, all the time during their divorce proceedings. So he bought a house a few doors down for Stacy and himself, took the girl out of the basement and moved her a few doors down while his wife and kids are living there. And his kids are probably, like, close to Stacy's age.
I mean, all of this is baffling. I'm also confused. How much money is he making, like, as a police officer? He got her an apartment, and then he can buy a second house?
He is a captain, so I assume he probably makes more than the average. And he's been there for a hot period, so he probably gets good benefits. But, yeah, we're also early 2000s, so I can't put two and two together. But he was apparently able to do all of this. About a year into the divorce proceedings, Drew kept harassing Kathleen. That was just the kind of person he was. And the police had actually, in 1 year, the police had been called to Kathleen's house over 20 times for things like Drew didn't drop the kids back off, Drew broke into the house, Drew just did some domestic violence act, like 20 times in 1 year. And as you can imagine, because of where they lived and who Drew was, he was never arrested or taken into custody or penalized or anything, which is crazy and very sad and scary.
Yeah, we've seen this a lot. Police love to protect police.
Yeah. So a few months later, so about a year and a half into the divorce and about 2 years into him dating Stacy, Stacy gave birth to Drew's baby. Love it. July 2003. Obviously, Drew wasn't legally married to Stacy. And so at this point, when Stacy gave birth, and I can imagine her whole pregnancy too, because I've gone through this, not this deal, but I went through pregnancy. Stacy didn't have any benefits. So, like, she didn't have health insurance. She didn't have any of Drew's benefits because they weren't married. So when the kid was born, Stacy was like, dude, you've got to figure out this divorce, like, because we need to have insurance on the baby, basically. And so Drew went to the court the very next day. So the day after the baby was born, and filed for a, and you're going to help me say this word, bifurcated divorce.
That's right.
Bifurcated divorce. Did not know what that was. It is a divorce that is, like, basically finalized right away, but the people are allowed to still figure out, like, resolution on, like, assets, child custody, but you are legally divorced now. Like, they're not waiting to figure out assets before getting divorced. So the court stated in the end that Kathleen was going to get the house in full custody of the kids, and Drew would have, like, weekend visitations. 8 days, people, 8 days after the divorce, Drew and Stacy went and got married. So at this point, Drew is 49 years old and Stacy is 19.
Still weird, but I understand you got to do it for the health insurance.
Yeah, but that's a lot.
This man's doing too much.
Too much. And Stacy, like, your brain ain't developed yet, but that's too old for a 19-year-old who's already had multiple wives. Okay. So 6 months later, we're on February 27th, 2004. Drew went to Kathleen's home to pick up the kids. And for the next 2 days, which was over a weekend, the kids spent their time at Drew and Stacy's house right down the street, just hanging out. So on February 29th, that was a Sunday, Drew and Stacy took the kids to an aquarium, went to dinner, and then went to Kathleen's house to drop off the kids around 8 p.m. Kathleen never answered the door to let the kids in, and the door was locked. So Drew kind of took it upon himself to, like, use this moment. And he was like, she didn't answer the door, I'm taking the kids, like, her loss kind of thing. Like, but he didn't try to go in the house. He didn't try to call her, nothing. So the next day, March 1st, no one at this point has heard from Kathleen. Drew, throughout the day, sent texts to her, tried calling her a few times, but was never able to get in contact. That night, Drew went to work around 5 p.m., but he swung by Kathleen's house around 7 to see if she was home. When Drew drove up to the house, Kathleen's neighbors, Mary and Steve, were outside chatting. Drew asked them if they had seen or heard from Kathleen, and they said they hadn't. So Drew decided to, you know, do whatever a divorcee would do, and he would call a locksmith to go get the front door unlocked, which I find a little odd. I would call the police, but again, he is the police. Something to mention, during their divorce proceeding, and apparently it had, like, a 2-year limit kind of thing, Kathleen had a protection order with Drew. So like he wasn't allowed to like come on her property without her permission, enter the house without her permission kind of thing. So when the locksmith opened up her front door, Drew asked the neighbors, Mary and Steve, if they would go inside to see if she was there because he wasn't allowed to. You can probably piece together what's about to happen, but about a minute into the neighbors being inside the house, Drew heard Mary let out a very loud scream. This prompted Drew to immediately run inside to see what was wrong, as he was a police officer. And it was there that Drew found Kathleen laying unconscious and unresponsive in the master bathroom's bathtub. Mary had just found Kathleen's lifeless body. So something to mention, which is, you know, very unfortunate in a lot of stories that we tell, but once Kathleen's body was found, the immediate investigation that occurred from the police was completely botched. The police were called, but the officers who showed up for this was their first murder ever. So they were totally not prepared, or their first death. Sorry, I should say first death, because we don't know if she was murdered. And they were completely inexperienced, not to mention this death was at the home of where Drew used to live. So the officers just kind of like assumed Drew was like helping out in the situation. And like, he just got to do whatever he want. He was on the scene the entire time. He was in that bathroom where her body was, like in the moment being one of the officers. And I guess an evidence tech was at the scene collecting evidence during the investigation, like right when Kathleen's body was found. And I don't know how this works because this is super weird, but they just like announced that Kathleen's death was totally accidental, which is not how any of this works. You have to go to a coroner, you have to get an autopsy, but from just looking at it, the police department were like, oh, it's an accident. It's an accident. Oh, and then get this. So while the investigation was going on, Drew being right in the middle of it, they allowed Drew to stay the night in the house.
He lives down the street.
I don't understand. It was the night that Kathleen's body was found in his former house. And Drew is like, oh, I'm going to stay like the night because this is like what I need to do. The police let it happen. It wasn't until the next day, March 2nd, the Illinois State Police Department took over the case from the Boiling Brook Police. And that's kind of where everything changed. But you can see like that just tells you right there how much like bias there was even in this kind of situation, you know. While all this was going on, rightfully so, Stacy, poor little baby Stacy, was freaking out. She was super confused on why her husband just stayed the night in the house that his ex-wife was found dead. And Stacy had even talked to others about how Drew had been acting very oddly during this whole thing. Not only, but apparently Drew had coached Stacy on what to say to people as well. So if reporters talked to her or she had any police interviews, Stacy admitted that Drew told her what to say. So if you think about it too, because Drew was in the police force, he was given these like extraordinary exemptions. For example, anytime Stacy was brought in to be interviewed about Kathleen's death, like to the station, Drew was allowed to be in the room sitting next to her the entire time. We don't do that, sir. No, we don't do that. That is illegal. And can you only imagine her like totally manipulated? On March 20th, so 19 days after Kathleen's body was found, her autopsy report was made public. The coroner had stated that Kathleen's death was due to an accidental drowning. Now, in the report, the coroner said that Kathleen's hair was fully soaked in blood and that this blood had come from the back of her head where there was a 3-inch gash. And they said this gash was most likely from slipping into the bathtub while trying to take a bath. And that when she hit her head, she passed out and then she drowned in the water in the bathtub. And then her body stayed in the bathtub for 24 hours until the neighbor Mary found her. And I guess the water in the bathtub just simply drained out. That was in the coroner's report, that the water just drained out of the bathtub within 24 hours.
I'm no scientist, but that doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
No, and that is not a thing. I don't know how long it would take for water to drain out of a bathtub, if it ever would, but that 24 hours, absolutely not.
No, because I mean, if the drain's plugged, you're running a bath, mm-hmm. It's not going to drain out.
That's the whole point of the plug for the bath.
Yeah, and then if it wasn't plugged and she had just like turned the water on, she wouldn't have drowned in the water.
Right. Yeah. I just think about this. If like the water's running and she's filling up the bathtub, who turned the water off? How did it drain? Like, there's a lot of questions that the coroner's report was stupid. That's just what I'm trying to say. It didn't make any sense. Oh, and then to obviously get this, Drew was allowed to stay in Kathleen's house that night after her death. Well, I don't get this part. The crime scene photos that were taken of Kathleen and the bathroom did not occur until the next day. So 24 hours after Kathleen's body was found was when they took crime scene evidence photos. Drew stayed in the house that night. So when you go and look at the crime scene photos in the bathroom, no blood, no towels, no robes, no, like no toiletries. There, the bathroom was completely empty. And that's because Drew cleaned up the bathroom.
I'm sorry, but this police department's really fucking stupid.
Yeah. So like, obviously at this point, two things could have happened. Okay. Either Kathleen had the normal bathroom set up and Drew cleaned it all up and took it away after her body, or Kathleen was never actually taking a bath that day. Just thrown out there. Anyway, so moving on. Okay. So after Kathleen's death, obviously, since her and Drew's divorce was finalized, but their assets weren't, lawyers kind of were trying to figure out whether or not Kathleen had a will, because that's where you would find stuff that happened post-death. And wouldn't you know it, Drew just happened to pull one right out as soon as they were looking for her will. And it was from March 2nd, 1997, so 7 years earlier, and it was signed by Kathleen. And in this will, it stated that if one of them had passed away, the other one would receive all the assets, which is kind of normal in a marriage case, but they're divorced, so that's not as normal. But get this, Kathleen's lawyer immediately came forward and said Kathleen never had a will and she never signed one. After Kathleen's death, there wasn't a funeral, which is so sad, but she was buried in a local cemetery, and Drew and Stacy went back to their normal lives as if nothing had happened. I also do want to just state this. I, because of how much detail there was in this story when I was going through it, I did cut out some parts. There was not a lot of information about the kids, like any of their reactions, how they were taken care of. Like, this case basically has nothing to do with the kids. So just keep in mind that they have four kids. Two are in high school, two are in elementary school. So almost Stacy age, just throwing that out. Because Kathleen was no longer around, Drew received all of the assets, which the full custody of the kids as well. And about 2 months after her death, the court officially ruled her death was accidental, even though Kathleen's family was very adamant that there's no way this was accidental and nothing made sense, as we agree. When the hearing first occurred, her family actually came out in like swarms, like every single person in her family came and testified, saying that they were always suspicious of Drew and how controlling he was of her, and that they know he had threatened her life multiple times and that there's no way this was accidental, but yet it was still ruled an accident. In 2004, a couple named Sharon and Bob moved next door to Stacy and Drew. And this ended up being a really positive thing for Stacy, because in the moment, she was very unhappy in their marriage and she really needed support, which she found from neighbor Sharon. As we can only imagine, saw this one coming, Drew had been very controlling of Stacy from the get-go of their relationship. He controlled where she went, what she ate, what she wore, everything. In fact, when Stacy was 19 years old, Drew paid for her to go get boob implants. And at 19, and it happens, but at 19 is too young in my head. And then after the birth of their first kid, he went and had Stacy get a tummy tuck, which, just throwing that out there, as a mom, we all know you don't do the tummy tuck after the first kid. You wait until you're done having kids to get the mommy makeover, period. So basically, he wanted Stacy to look a particular way all the time. 2 years later, one of Stacy's siblings, she was really close to, passed away to cancer. After this happened, Stacy fell into a really deep depression. And of course, Drew would tell people that this is the reason their marriage was horrible, was because of Stacy and depression, which is nice. And at this point, Stacy's only 23 years old and Drew is 53. Don't get me wrong, I've said it before, I'm cool with age gaps, but 30 years is a big difference, especially when you're in your 20s. Like, that's a big age gaps to me. I think if you're in your 20s, you've got to stay within like the 10 year realm.
But yeah, there's young adult and then there's adult.
Right. Like, if you're 21 and dating someone in your 40s, that's still, to me, I'm like, that's a little, you're still a baby. You're a baby.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't judge, but 30 years is a big difference at 23. Your lifestyle is just completely different. And just remember too, because Kathleen was dead, Stacy was now a full-time stay-at-home mom, which I can't even imagine. That's four kids and she's 23 years old. In 2007, so a year later, Stacy's depression wasn't any better, and she began reaching out to old friends to see if she could connect with some of them and get back like her old spark. At some point, she connected with an old high school friend named Scott. At first, they communicated just through texting, but eventually started meeting up and hanging out. But this wasn't a secret friendship. Drew actually knew all about Scott and who he was. So it was like a public thing. It wasn't secret. Stacy would go and meet Scott for like coffee dates or like hangouts and stuff like that. And occasionally Drew would show up to these hangout dates. And apparently he would just sit there in silence and like watch Scott. As someone being 30 years older and a man, like just watching you hang out with his wife. I mean, it's purposefully intimidating.
Oh no, he's controlling every aspect of her life. Like making her be a stay-at-home mom. She has no income of her own now.
No, at all. A few months later, when one of Stacy's family members were visiting her in town, Stacy mentioned multiple times that she was now planning on leaving Drew. This is like the October 2007. So, and that she was planning on doing it soon. On October 26th, Stacy told Drew that she wanted to divorce him. The same day, Stacy had called home and spoke to a few of her family members and planned to go to California during the divorce proceedings. During one of the phone calls, specifically to Stacy's younger sister, Stacy told her that she was scared for her life because of Drew and that, quote, if I end up dead, it was Drew, end quote. That ain't good, Stacy. That ain't good, my girl. 2 days later, on October 28th, 2007, 23-year-old Stacy Peterson went missing. 2 days.
I know if anyone I knew ever told me their spouse, anyone in their life, they said, if I'm dead, it's because of so-and-so, I'm immediately like putting you into like my own version of witness protection.
Yep. Like you tell me that on the phone, you are either leaving your house right there and then, or I'm coming to get you. Like that's not a thing that you like, oh my God, can you even imagine? I can't imagine, especially like your sister.
No, I'm taking your ass to Aruba.
Yep. Absolutely. You're out of here. Yep. All right. So according to Drew Mann himself, this is the timeline of what happened. All right. So I'm going to tell you a little story. October 28th, when he returned home from his overnight shift, which was about like 6 a.m., he went straight to bed. Around 11 a.m., Drew woke up to his kids, and that's when he noticed Stacy wasn't in the house. But according to Drew, he wasn't too worried because Stacy had told him that she was going to go visit her grandfather that morning. But it came to public later that actually, one of Stacy's friends was adamant that her and Stacy were supposed to hang out that morning and Stacy never showed up. So we don't know if the grandfather thing was true. Around 1 p.m. that day, Drew left the house to go to the grocery store. He left the kids at home. At 2 p.m., Drew called the police department and put in a request to use some of his PTO. Now, the whole PTO request kind of wasn't out of the ordinary because it was known that Drew was planning on retiring at some point that year, like in a few months. And apparently with the Bolingbroke Police Department, if you didn't use your PTO, you lost it. Like they weren't going to pay you out for it. So he was like, I'm going to use it sooner than later. Totally fine. Drew got back to their family house at 3 p.m., decided to take his kids to McDonald's for dinner. And then they came back home around 8 p.m. He put the kids to bed around 9 p.m. And so Drew said at 9 p.m. he received a phone call from Stacy because she still ain't home. And Drew said that in this phone call, Stacy told him that she was leaving. She was going out of town and she was on her way to the airport with another man. Drew said that after Stacy hung up, he got into his car and decided he was going to go find Stacy at the airport. He had no luck finding her and he went back to the house at 11 p.m. Okay, so apparently When Drew arrived home, he received at 11 p.m., he received another phone call, but it wasn't from Stacy. It was from her younger sister, who was asking why she hadn't heard from Stacy that day. And that's when Drew told the sister, like, oh, your sister just told me she's skipping town with another man. And he said, quote, she only packed a bikini and a passport, end quote. We know that ain't true. Okay, you're 23 years old, but we know if you've already said you're divorcing your husband. Let's say you are running off to be with another man. First of all, she has kids at the house. So I'm going to go ahead and say that I don't believe that for a second. But also, she ain't just packing a bikini and a passport. That is not... I'm packing that toothbrush before I'm packing a bikini.
Literally every important thing ever if I'm planning on skipping town.
Yes. Yeah. But he told his sister, her sister, bikini and passport. So whatever. After that phone call ended, Drew actually walked to the airport to pick up Stacy's car and he drove it home. So this was weird to me, obviously, as it should be weird to anyone. And then I looked it up and the airport was only 1.2 miles away. So I guess it wasn't really weird to walk there in order to get her car home because he was not going to leave his car to drive her car back, you know, like, but in the moment he did it right away. Like,
yeah, that wouldn't be my first thought. If it were true, no.
He's also not calling the cops, just throwing this out there. So after he brought Stacy's car home, Drew went to bed. He woke up at 2:30 a.m. to the police department calling him. Apparently, Stacy's younger sister had gotten off the phone with Drew earlier that night, and she went and filed a missing persons report for Stacy. And that's basically where Drew's story ends, is like, this is what happened. This is all I know. I tried to find her. She left me bikini passport, you know, man. But in this case, which we love, snaps for the police, they jumped on her missing persons report immediately. During the police investigation, they found some gaps in Drew's story, like we all just heard, and they were able to fill it in a little bit. So I'm going to tell you about what really happened. So neighbor Sharon vividly remember seeing Stacy's car in the driveway the morning before at 10 a.m. Drew said that Stacy was already gone when he returned home from work at 6 a.m. Stacy's friends said that they actually were on the phone together at 10 a.m. And Stacy said she was still in bed, but she was going to come over in a bit. Once again, Drew said that she was visiting her grandfather and that she wasn't in the house. Neighbor Sharon came back from the grocery store later, and then she didn't see Stacy's car in the driveway. So there was like an hour gap where it was there and then it wasn't, but it was after like 11 a.m. So when the neighbor didn't see Stacy's car in the driveway, she called the house just to see if the kids were home and they wanted to like come over and play. This was like a normal thing. And when she was talking to one of the kids on the phone, Drew picked up the other phone line. You know how like you could have multiples. Yep. Drew picked up the other phone line and said, Stacy isn't home. She's visiting her grandfather. But like, Sharon never asked that.
Planting a seed.
Absolutely. So at 1 p.m. that day, Drew told Sharon he was going to go run some errands. The kids were at her house. All is good. But if you remember in the story to the police, Drew left the kids at home by themselves. 4 hours later, so at 5 p.m., both neighbor Sharon and Stacy's younger sister had tried to call Stacy on her cell phone, but neither of them could get through because the phone went straight to voicemail, which we know means her phone is dead or turned off. Apparently, having not heard from Stacy that day, her younger sister actually drove over to their house, the Peterson house, and that was around 11 p.m. When her sister arrived at the house, there were no cars in the driveway. So she rung the doorbell and one of the older kids answered it and said that, like, mom and dad had gotten into a fight, mom left, dad went to go find her. Stacy's sister then called Drew, like Drew said in his report, and asked if he had heard from Stacy. So if you remember, Drew was like, oh, she's gone, you know, bikini, passport. But Stacy's sister was sitting in the driveway and Stacy's like, neither cars are there. Plus one of the kids said they weren't in the house, but Drew in his statement said, no, I went looking for her. Like, I'm at home. She's not here. Blah, blah, blah. So like, obviously someone's lying. I'm going to believe the sister at this point. Stacy's sister basically immediately knew something was up from here, went straight to the police department to file a missing persons report. But she kind of knew in the back of her head how this was going to go, because she went to the Bolingbrook Police Department and she was like, yo, Stacy's missing. Drew's her husband. She knew they kind of probably weren't going to do anything about it. So she actually very smartly went to the Illinois State Police Department office and filed a missing persons report there as well. Very smart in that moment, because she was like, they're probably not going to do about it, but the Illinois State Police will. Pretty much right away, the police went and got Drew's testimony, which is the one I told you about. Also went and got Stacy's cell phone account to check on timelines to see if like the calls made sense. Okay. Also, this is happening within like a day. So I'm like really like proud of the Illinois State Police. Like they did their shit immediately, which is awesome. So snaps to you, Illinois State Police. On the day that Stacy went missing, her phone was turned off the entire day, which is why no one could get in contact with her. But at 9 p.m. that night, her phone was turned on and a phone call was made to Drew. This phone call location pinged at Stacy's friend Scott's neighborhood. After hearing a bunch of stuff from Drew who Scott was, the police pretty much right away were like, oh my God, Scott is the guy that Stacy had run off with. And obviously, like, Drew put the fire on that one because he definitely didn't like Scott. But fortunately for Scott, he had proof that he had been working that night and had not seen Stacy that day at all. And that was proven to be true. So he had an alibi. 2 days into Stacy's missing persons report, a man named Walter called the Illinois State Police saying one of his friends had just survived a suicide attempt. And why do I tell you this? Because his friend was Thomas Morph, which was Drew's stepbrother. According to Thomas, he had attempted to kill himself after he realized that, quote, he might have helped Drew dispose of a body, end quote.
What?
Yeah, juicy. All right. There's a lot of names. Sorry, I should have warned you. There's a lot of names in this case, but I'm going to help you out. So I'm going to tell you about Thomas. This is Drew's stepbrother. This is his story. On October 27th, the day before Stacy disappeared, Drew showed up to Thomas's home, stepbrothers, to go run some errands. They were stepbrothers by marriage, by the way, not by blood. So they literally weren't blood related at all.
But that's literally what stepbrothers means.
Oh, yeah, you're right, because half brothers. as Polly would say, cut it out. So Drew showed up to Thomas's house to pick him up to go run some errands. During their drive, Drew told Thomas about Stacy and how she was divorcing him and leaving him for another man. And Drew told Thomas that he needed to take care of the issue and asked Thomas whether or not he loved him enough to kill for him. Fucking weird. But Thomas told his stepbrother, like, no, I would never kill someone. And that's when Drew asked Thomas, okay, well, would you be okay knowing about a killing?
Why is he yapping about this?
Right. Because he's a cocky son of a gun. So when Drew said that, Thomas responded that he actually felt like he already knew Drew had killed someone, because he said, I thought you had killed Kathleen a few years ago. Which, like, your brother saying that to you. So Thomas is telling the police this, by the way. During their drive, Drew stopped at a storage unit place and asked for Thomas to go rent a storage unit. But Thomas couldn't because he didn't have an ID at the time. So Drew just was like, never mind, I'm going to drive Thomas back to his house. A few hours later, Drew got a call from Thomas, and Thomas said, I don't want to be involved in whatever you're talking about from earlier. Like, don't involve me. Fast forward 24 hours. So now it's October 28th, the day that Stacy went missing. Drew randomly shows up at Thomas's house again and is like, hey, let's go run some errands. And get this. So instead of running errands, Drew just went and dropped Thomas off at a local park. He handed Thomas a cell phone and said, I'll be back in an hour, but do not answer the cell phone. At this point, I don't really understand what was going through Thomas's head. Maybe he just did whatever Drew said, kind of deal. Like, I don't know the age difference, the, you know, is he have authority over him kind of thing. But
well, I mean, if he already suspects him of killing one person,
yeah,
I'd be a little scared shitless.
Yeah.
I'll hold the cell phone in the park.
Just go stand there in the park. So according to Thomas, the cell phone that Drew had given him to not answer received multiple calls within that 1 hour period. And at some point, Thomas looked at the phone when it was ringing and saw Stacy's name pop up. At some point during that hour, which was around 9 p.m., Thomas accidentally answered one of the calls, but he didn't know that because it was in his pocket. But we find out later that like he did accidentally answer one of the calls. After picking up Thomas from the park, Drew took him back to his own house where the kids were sleeping. So it's around 10:30 at this point. And once at the house, Drew asked Thomas to help him lift something heavy into his car from his bedroom. It was at this point that Thomas saw a giant blue barrel in the bedroom. He said it was extremely heavy to lift and was very oddly warm to touch. Thomas helped Drew load it into Drew's truck. Drew then drove Thomas back to his own house, gave him some money before dropping him off and said, quote, none of this ever happened, end quote. So Thomas, you ain't had a good night there, buddy. You did some sketchy shit. You put a barrel, a giant barrel, into your brother's car that was heavy and warm. So Stacy had actually known about this big barrel. It was a blue 55-gallon large barrel that was in their like garage. So this was like a thing at their house. Apparently it had been filled with some liquid and was always closed shut. And so that's why Stacy never knew like what it was. Drew had told her that it was chlorine for their outdoor pool. But I did some research on that because I was like, a 55-gallon of like thing of chlorine doesn't make any sense. That's a shitload of chlorine. All right, I did some math, Kylie. You're going to be proud of me. It actually took me way too long to do this math. I'm actually very ashamed. Like, it's quite embarrassing. I don't want to say a day, but it might have been a day. The average size of a pool the year that this all took place was a 20-foot diameter pool. The amount of water in a 24 diameter meter pool is 1,300 gallons. On average, for that size of a pool, you use 10 ounces of chlorine a week. There's 52 weeks in a year. You need 10 ounces every week. That's 520 ounces of chlorine. That is 5 gallons of chlorine for 1 year. And you're going to tell me there was 55 gallons of chlorine in that blue barrel?
Yeah, I don't think Costco sells that large amount of chlorine.
No, absolutely not. That's 11 years of chlorine.
I am impressed by your math skills. I would have never even attempted.
That last one was right in my head. 55 divided by 5 was 11. That was right. I did that really quick. Thank you. Anyways, at 10 p.m. that night, after Thomas was dropped back off at his house, Thomas called his friend Walter. So this is where Walter came in. On this phone call, both men recalled Thomas saying that he just helped his stepbrother get rid of Stacy's body. But funny enough, Walter didn't take this like by surprise. And that's because what we might have assumed, Thomas had some mental health issues. He was also a former addict as well. So Walter kind of assumed that maybe his friend was just making this up and having a relapse or something like this. The next day, once the investigation had started on Stacy's disappearance and Thomas had heard the news, he called up his brother and he's like, Drew, I want to kill myself. I can't believe this. I can't believe what I did. And Drew said, you don't need to worry, and hung up the phone. Like, Drew had given two shits about his stepbrother.
Yeah, that statement would have had me worrying.
Yes. A few hours later, Thomas called his other brother, who was full blood related to him, and told him what happened the previous day with Drew. Obviously, the other brother, like any normal human, freaked out and said Thomas needs to call the cops. As soon as Thomas hung up the phone with him, he proceeded to overdose on prescription pills. Now, knowing that Thomas had been acting on the phone call with him, that brother had actually hung up the phone and immediately called the cops, which is like, that's a good brother, you know, like he knew they needed to go to the house right now and do a welfare check. And thank God he did, because those people showed up, firefighters and the ambulance, And they showed up in time in order to save Thomas from his overdose. So the next day, October 30th, 2 days after Stacy's disappearance, Drew went to Thomas's house. Obviously, not knowing he was in the hospital, Thomas's girlfriend answered the door and let Drew know. Obviously, Drew booked it to the hospital, probably thinking he needed to talk to Thomas before anybody else did. But once again, it all kind of worked out because Drew went to the hospital, talked to Thomas, probably said shit like, don't tell anybody what happened, blah, blah. The police were smart enough to not talk to Thomas the day after the suicide attempt happened. They waited because they were like, he's traumatized. He just went through something. He's probably on meds right now. Let's wait until he's good to talk to him. So on October 31st, the police interviewed Thomas for the first time. And that's when they gained the story and the timeline that we just went over. So Drew Peterson, as of now, October 31st, is an official suspect for the disappearance of his wife, Stacy. Same day, quick thinking by the police, Thomas was asked to get on a recorded line with Drew to see if Drew would fess up to anything to Thomas over the phone. On this call, Drew told Thomas to not to speak to anyone, including the cops, and to definitely not say anything over the phone. He knows better. He's a cop, you know, but a little suspicious. The next day, November 1st, dude, this investigation is so good, Kylie. They did, like, this is a day-by-day period. Like, they did everything within a few days. Very proud. This is like a proud mom moment.
This is the Illinois State Police, not mm-hmm. the...
Yeah. Not you, Bolingbrook, but Illinois State Police. The Illinois State Police got a search warrant for Drew's house. From whatever they found in his home, because I couldn't figure it out, Drew was now being named as the prime suspect. On that same day that he was named as prime suspect, the judge actually ordered for Kathleen's body to be exhumed. So they had to have figured something out where they were like, Drew's the main suspect for his wife's disappearance. His wife died in a weird manner a few years ago. Let's go and re-autopsy her body. Because of this judge's order, and because Drew was a suspect in Stacy's death, well, wouldn't you think? The Bolingbrook Police Department came forward and said, maybe we should do an internal investigation of Drew. A little late to the game, boys. Obviously, once Drew found out he was about to have an internal reviewer done, fucking livid, he was already being questioned 24/7 by the other police department, but now his own. He must have thought they were going to find something, or he knew they were going to find something. And so he immediately resigned from his job. And because he resigned from the job and he wasn't fired, he ended up getting his full pension benefits. I think when I looked it up, it was like $80,000 a year.
Oh, that's why he did it. He wanted the money. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He wanted the money. 3 days after Kathleen's body was exhumed, the judge ordered for two separate autopsies to take place. He wanted to gain further information on her manner of death from different sources. Both of them determined that the gash on the back of Kathleen's head was not damaging enough to have made her unconscious, which is major. Both reports also stated that the blood patterns found on the tub with luminol, because remember, the crime scene photos were clean, they found blood with luminol, was not consistent with the tub having been filled with water. But the biggest news, I think, personally, as if, you know, the other stuff was relevant, the coroner's report stated that the crime scene was indeed a homicide and it had been staged to look like an accident.
Finally.
So during the investigation the entire time, as you can probably imagine, Drew was like living it up. He loved the attention. The media was constantly swarming him. He was being interviewed by everybody. You know, as any of these stories go, people are outside their house like 24/7. And so he talked to everybody. He loved the attention. There were so many freaking videos that I found of this dude on news clips, just chit-chatting away, laughing it up, being obnoxious. Like he was like a movie star, basically. Once someone brought up the blue 55-gallon like drum, he immediately shut down. He got pissed and he started acting super weird. I actually have a clip for you to watch. It's from a local news station that's covering updates on the investigation. So I'm going to have you watch it.
Robin, startling new revelations about this mysterious container, a container that has clearly become the focus of this sensational missing persons case. All this as suspect Drew Peterson continues his sometimes bizarre long-running dialogue with the media.
What's going on today?
Yes. We went to McDonald's. Okay. We had Happy Meals and McRib sandwiches. How's that? And that's what's going on today.
What I want to talk about is I'm going to come camp myself in front of your house and see if you like it.
If he feels pressure from all the scrutiny, it's hard to tell. At times joking, smiling, even laughing with reporters, you almost get the feeling that Drew Peterson is somehow enjoying the attention. Officially, however, he is considered a suspect in the sudden disappearance of his fourth wife, Stacy Peterson. The former Bolingbrook police sergeant came out of his house yesterday with a home video camera, walking around the small army of TV news trucks and personnel virtually camped out in front of his Bolingbrook home. This bizarre spectacle amid reports that one of his relatives tried to commit suicide just days after allegedly helping Drew remove a large blue container from Drew's bedroom the day after Stacy Peterson disappeared. The Chicago Tribune reports that their relative said the mysterious container was warm to the touch. But late last night, our own Julie Unruh confronted Peterson about the container and the allegation that the container may have had the body of Stacy Peterson.
Relative of yours saying you helped carry a rectangular container out of your home on October 28th.
I have no idea what anybody's talking about like that.
Warm to the touch.
No.
He says he believes that he helped you dispose of your wife's body. No. Can you at least respond to that?
No.
Not at all.
No response. Talk to my lawyer. I got nothing to
no
say about it.
No truth to it whatsoever.
None. Nobody helped me with anything in such a manner.
I got like full blown ick watching that.
He is a walking ick. Odd man. Not even odd. He's just douchey. Like, the yeah.
Yeah, your wife's missing. You're out there joking with the news teams.
Moving on a little bit. At the end of April in 2008, so about 6 months after Stacy disappeared, Drew, you know, being the great man that he is, put up a $25,000 reward for Stacy's safe return. I assume that this was just trying to make himself look good. I'm sure his lawyers had something to do with it. But a few months later, Drew was actually arrested for the first time. Now, this arrest had nothing to do with Kathleen or Stacy. In fact, he was arrested for the possession of an illegal weapon. And that's because Drew owned an AR-15 rifle, but apparently this gun's barrel was shorter than it was legally allowed. What I do know is this is how they get people into the system so that they can investigate them further. On July 14th, Drew pleaded not guilty to this charge because he said the rifle was given to him from the police department. But this is a fun little legal tidbit. The prosecutors for this weapon charge weren't actually out to get Drew for the violation. In fact, they were trying to keep Drew under watch, like what I said earlier, until a new law had come out. And this new law was going to help them extremely in their cases for both Kathleen and Stacy. So on November 20th, 2008, about 6 months after his weapons charge, the state of Illinois voted to allow hearsay statute in court. This new statute was called Drew's Law, and this law would allow for hearsay in the judicial proceedings if prosecution was able to prove to the judge that this hearsay came from the now deceased person.
So like what Stacy said to her sister.
Yes, on the phone, or her family, or her neighbor, or her friends. On this exact day that the law came into effect on November 20th, Drew's gun charge was dropped. While the investigation into Drew continued, the prosecution began collecting physical and verbal evidence for their case. Drew went off and got engaged.
What? Yep.
You heard that right. Drew Peterson was once again about to be married. Who was this lucky woman? A girl, a random girl that he had just met. Her name was Christina Rains. She was 24 years old.
I have no words.
I have a video for you to watch.
Drew is under suspicion for the death of his third wife. He's been implicated in the disappearance of his fourth wife. And a lot of people think, why would you put yourself in the situation of becoming potentially his fifth wife?
Well, first, I don't believe that he did anything wrong. And well, I love him. I have a lot of fun.
How would you describe the Drew that you know versus the Drew that other people have seen portrayed in the media?
Very kind and loving. Very nice. He makes me laugh.
What makes Chrissy different from wives 1, 2, 3, and 4?
It's a feeling. I mean, she's not an heiress. She doesn't have millions I'm after. I mean, she's, you know, a simple girl, and she's got a couple kids, and all I want from her is her love.
The two live in the same house that Peterson shared with his fourth wife, Stacy, who vanished in October of 2007.
I see Stacy's picture
right
on the wall. I see her presence everywhere.
Right.
Chrissy, is that hard for you to see her presence everywhere?
It looks like she don't want to answer.
Since Stacy mysteriously disappeared and the death of his third wife was ruled a homicide, Peterson says he has never had problems dating.
How many women have you dated since then?
A few. Couple. I can't even count. You know, I've gone out, you know, here and there.
They come up to you?
Sometimes. Sure. You know, just being out there. And this, it's funny, women, for some silly reason, are attracted to that. And I can't explain it. I don't understand it. But
attracted to the danger, perhaps, or the...
I don't know. See, once people start knowing me and my personality kicks in, I think people are attracted to my personality. So, I think Chrissy's attracted to my personality. So, certainly not my good looks.
Chrissy, I mean, was there a dangerous, like, you know, the notoriousness? I mean, you think of Drew Peterson, you think a lot of things. Was that attractive at all?
No. No, I'd known him from before, and he's always been nice to me, so.
You've known him from before. You've known him when he was still married to Stacy?
Yes.
So when all of this news broke and Stacy disappeared, what did you think?
I felt bad for him. I felt like she was, like, kidnapped or something, but that's it. I didn't think that he did anything to her.
People who are watching say, what is this girl thinking? Why would she even take a chance? What if he is guilty? What do you say to those people?
I'm running the other way. I'm just joking.
She is very childish.
24 years old, going on like 15. Her mentality is just underage.
Yeah, giggling, talking about your new man's two, or one missing ex-wife and one dead wife.
Yeah. And just laughing the whole time.
Not a good look.
Yeah. And Drew was pretty, like, not emotional, too, which is not the norm for him. But my favorite part of the interview, because it goes on for a little while, is that the interviewer pretty much stayed on Christina the entire time, but she was asking, like, the same question in different ways. Like, do you understand why? Do you get what I'm saying? Like, trying to be like, honey, are you listening to me?
And she was not.
Yeah. But fun enough, Kylie, the engagement didn't last too long. A week after the Today Show interview aired, the two of them broke off their engagement. After the separation, Drew continued on with his life, did all the media interviews possible, did a bunch of radio interviews. He was called onto shows a few times. Like, he lived it up as much as possible. And if you guys want to go and watch it, please, by all means, Drew Peterson on YouTube is a million videos. So he acted like an idiot in most of them, was laughing most of the time, like a 50-something-year-old child. But on May 7th, 2009, so about a year and 7 months after Stacy's disappearance, and 8 years and 5 months after Kathleen's death, Drew Peterson was officially arrested and charged with 2 counts of murder for the death of Kathleen Peterson. Of course, Drew pleaded not guilty to both, but he ended up being held on a $20 million bond, which for 2009 is a crazy number.
Also, for, like, only being charged with one murder.
Right. During the court proceedings, the prosecution and the defense team kind of went back and forth through the evidence that the prosecutors had found. And it was in 2010 when the judge, this was Judge White, he ended up hearing from 68 different witnesses. So like a ton of people came forward. I also do want to mention that Drew's defense attorney was an absolute twat himself. He was a horrible person. He happened to be very good friends with Drew before all of this happened. And they pretty much had like the same, they were joking the entire time, like very obnoxious. And his attorney would verbally state multiple times that this was like a open and shut case. Like Kathleen had died accidentally. Like he was so like, he totally thought that this was all stupid. But of course the prosecutor who actually ended up becoming a legendary prosecutor very heavily disagreed, literally and physically took both of them to court, stomped all over them. This dude went all over the town proving how awful these two people were, Drew and his lawyer. So that just kind of gives you insight. At some point during the early proceedings, Judge White made a decision that the hearsay ruling would not come into play in Kathleen's case. And this decision is not made public. It's not a public thing. And well, wouldn't you know it? Someone from the defense team leaked it to the public. And this news went viral and people were pissed because obviously this law was put on place because of Drew. Judge White was so in shock that this illegal action had taken place, like something that he did was passed out to public, that he actually immediately retired. He was like, I'm not taking the case, I'm retiring, which is crazy. Like that kind of means like a big deal, you know?
Yeah, it's not his fault. I feel bad for him though.
Mm-hmm. So a new judge took over the trial, and this is Judge Edward Bermilla. Now, because there was a new judge in the case, the prosecution was able to appeal that hearsay decision. And in April of 2012, an appellate court reversed Judge White's lack of hearsay ruling and allowed for certain hearsay statements to be in the trial. And finally, on July 31st, 2012, the Drew Peterson case of the murder of Kathleen Peterson began. The prosecution focused primarily the first few days on like who Drew was as a human, his domestic violence background, his shitty employment as a cop, and the defense really honed in on the fact of like Kathleen's original autopsy, the people that were at the crime scene, like the stuff that we now know was so botched. Basically, within the first few weeks of the trial, the prosecution brought up a few people to testify against Drew. And so I want to tell you about this. One of the first people was Kathleen's sister. Her name's Anna. Anna told the court how Drew had told her many times that Kathleen was like never going to make it through the divorce because he would kill her first. The sister knew this. Mind blown. Telling the court. Second person was Kathleen's friend, Kristen, who stated that Kathleen had told her multiple times that Drew could easily kill her and make it look like an accident. Another person, love this dude, was an Illinois State Police Sergeant named Patrick Collins, who told the court all about how Drew had coached Stacy through her interviews. When I first saw that, I was like, how the hell did he say that in court? But I guess like there was footage or something of Drew specifically telling Stacy what she needed to say in the interviews before she said it. The fourth person was one of Kathleen's friends. Her name was Mary. And Mary's testimony was actually quite sad. She stated how one time Drew had broken into Kathleen's home during their divorce, and he threw her down the stairs and put a knife up against her throat. Kathleen had gone to Mary after this event and showed her like the bruises and scars that she had from it. But get this, when Mary told Kathleen to report the incident to the police, wouldn't you believe it? The police never did anything about it. So after being ignored by the police, Kathleen even wrote a letter to the assistant state's attorney detailing the attack that just happened with Drew. They had physical evidence of. I have the letter, but I'm going to read you a part of it. Mr. Peterson got into my home with a garage door opener that he programmed for himself while I was out of town with my son. Drew was in uniform when he came over with a police radio in his ear. He broke in and yelled at me to sit down and be quiet, but I refused, and that's when he pushed me down the stairs. Drew was very angry that in our divorce proceeding, the judge ruled that he would have to pay me child support. He then pulled out a knife, put it on my neck, and continued to threaten me. At some point, when he stopped, he finally did, and he walked away, end quote. Kathleen's friend, Mary, who's the one talking on stand, is like telling the court this story, and then went on to say, like, a few months after that, Stacy went to Kathleen's house to pick up the kids one day, and they basically, like, her and Drew started provoking. This is only a few months after that whole incident happened, and, like, Stacy and Drew are provoking Kathleen, and I guess Stacy had, like, a like a recording camera in her hand, and when Kathleen was walking down the driveway, she tried to grab the camera, and Drew pinned her to the ground. He, like, threw her to the ground, Kathleen, because she tried to grab the camera. He threw her to the ground, kicked her, and then handcuffed her, saying that she was under arrest for assault. Now, she's in her own property, like, at her own house, and, like, the kids are there. Stacy goes and gets the kids, puts them in the car. Once the kids are in the car, Drew takes the handcuffs off of Kathleen and drives away.
Insane behavior.
Can you imagine being Kathleen? Like, I would be like, he's going to kill me someday. I know it.
Oh, for sure.
And he just took the kids too. Like, I can't even imagine the next, like, few hours, what was going through her head. So at some point, another testimony, because there was lots of testimonies made, but at some point another testimony was made, but it ended up being thrown out by the judge because this person kept changing the date in their testimony. And this testimony was actually by Stacy's friend, Scott, the guy that we had talked about before. Scott's testimony included the fact that Stacy had told him she thought Drew killed Kathleen. And because Scott couldn't get the dates right on when the story happened, his testimony was barred. Another testimony, which this one's kind of a big deal, was of a cable guy named Jeff. Love it. Love you, Jeff. Jeff was called over to the Peterson house at some point to, like, fix something. And while he was there, Drew asked him if he knew of anyone that could, quote, take care of his wife in exchange for $25,000. Jeff's like, the fuck? Jeff leaves like, no, thank you. A few months later, Drew called Jeff and told him he didn't need his assistance anymore. And Jeff's over here like, I didn't ask for an update. Like, I didn't know. But that came to court, came to life. So on the 15th day of the trial, Stacy's pastor, Pastor Neil, took the stand. Now, this was a big one. And that's because Pastor Neil told the court that, like, of a conversation that had happened between him and Stacy together. Stacy had called Pastor Neil one day and said, hey, can we meet up? But we need to meet in public because I, like, am worried. And so, obviously, red flags. The pair met at a local coffee shop. And that's when Stacy told him that she felt guilty for lying for Drew during Kathleen's death investigation because she knows that he killed her. The pastor saying this. Yeah. When this all played out in court and the pastor saying all of this, it apparently, like, shocked the court. Like, people were absolutely in shock. And I don't know if they didn't, it's not that they didn't take the other stuff serious, but I guess because it was a pastor that, like, people were like, oh my God, we have to, like, whatever he's saying is very true.
Yeah, he wouldn't lie, especially in court.
Right. As for the defense, during the trial, when it came to them bringing up, like, testimonies and stuff like that, they pretty much did everything within a few days, a very short period of time. And like I said before, they only talked to people who had been around during the beginning phase of Kathleen's investigation. So, like, the original coroner, investigation team, crime scene tech, stuff like that. On the final day, though, of the defense's testimony, they actually called the divorce attorney to the stand, which I don't get. Okay, this is the defense. They called the divorce attorney, Harry Smith, and Harry told the court that a few days before Stacy disappeared, she had actually called him and asked, hey, if Drew killed Kathleen, will that be used against him? Obviously, the court is like, what'd you just say? Why would the defense team put that divorce lawyer up there for him to say something that, like, incriminates Drew? And that's because the defense team thought this testimony would make Stacy look greedy.
Yeah, I think that backfired.
I love that the defense attorney was like, yeah, I'll go up there. That's fine. I'm not helping you. But yeah, it completely backfired. But everything worked out in prosecution's favor because on September 6, 2012, after 14 hours of deliberation, the jury returned with a verdict that Drew Peterson indeed was found guilty on both counts of murder against his former wife, Kathleen Peterson. On February 21st, 2013, Drew was sentenced to 38 years in prison for the murder, but it gets even better. After 2 years in prison, Drew took on another felony charge. On February 9th, 2015, Drew was actually charged with solicitation of a murder. An inmate that was in prison with Drew informed police that Drew was attempting to put a hit out on his former prosecutor. After receiving the tip, the inmate worked with the police and wore a wire to record Drew, and they ended up having over 40 hours of Drew talking about how he was hiring someone to kill the prosecutor.
Because that would solve all of his problems, for yeah. sure.
In May 2016, Drew was found guilty of solicitation of murder and solicitation of murder for hire, and received an additional 40 years to his current sentencing. So that is 78 years.
Thank God.
Since convicted, Drew Peterson has always maintained his innocence in Kathleen's death and Stacy's disappearance. To this day, he continues to file motions for a new trial, though they've always been rejected. And then get this, 3 years ago, this was a really weird thing to see, but 3 years ago, so 2022, Drew's former defense attorney, the douchey guy, publicly announced that he was considering releasing confidential information that Drew had told him that was protected by the attorney-client privilege.
Is that not illegal?
It is. And I'll say attorney lightly because his license was revoked in 2019 for misconduct.
Good.
And he had stated, quote, "I know everything about everything with his wives. I feel bad about Drew still not taking responsibility, and I feel bad that Stacy is still missing. I'm thinking about maybe revealing what happened to Stacy and where she is," end quote.
Thinking about it, you're yeah. still a dickhead.
Yeah. So, I mean, he lost his license. He's threatening to release information about what happened to Stacy, but he's not releasing the information. I also just have to say, like, in this circumstance, Kylie, I'm a little, like, back and forth. If Drew told him he did something to Stacy and he knows where she is and it never came to limelight, there's got to be a way for the attorney-client privilege to not be around for that. Because isn't it when it has to do with murder?
If it's already happened, like, if you tell your attorney, like, I killed so-and-so, their body is at whatever place, your attorney doesn't have to say anything to anyone. They yeah. only have to say anything if you're like, I'm going to murder so-and-so yeah. to do this.
Okay, yeah, that's right. It should be allowed.
And,
you know, I get it because that would make a lot of people guilty. But in Stacy's case, we want to find out what happened to Stacy, you know?
No, and I think this guy, no longer an attorney, if he does know where she is, it would be the good thing to do.
Right. And he's not reputable anyways. Like, he's already been disbarred and everything.
Submit an anonymous tip. I mean, we'll know it too, but
yeah. So to this day, his name's Joel Brodsky, but former attorney Joel Brodsky, he hasn't commented anymore since 2022, and he's currently under a gag order to not disclose any further details that Drew Peterson may have given him. As of today, in 2025, there has still been no justice for Stacy Peterson. No one knows whatever happened to her. No one knows if she's alive or dead. Never found her body. No one has even found that blue 55-gallon barrel. And that is the case of Drew Peterson.
That might have been the juiciest case we've covered.
Really? Thank you.
That was so much. God, what a whirlwind. I mean, he definitely killed Stacy.
1000%. She was in that barrel.
And it is so sad. Her kids, no closure.
None at all. How sad. Yeah, how sad. All four.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah. And I mean, you've seen the videos now. If you haven't looked at who Drew Peterson is, you guys, listeners, you need to go look at a picture of him. He just is scummy. Like, him and all his interviews, too, he's just an absolute, like, he is the definition of a twat. Like, he just sucks.
I mean, I'm no psychiatrist, but, like, he's a full-blown narcissist.
Yes, he is a full-blown, that's what it is. He's a full-blown narcissist.
You see the ick when you look at him.
Yeah. So he will be like 120 something before he's released from prison. So he will die in prison, which is what he deserves. But it doesn't look like at the moment at all that we're ever going to find out about Stacey.
And that sucks. And I'm sure there's not really any urgency since he does have such a long prison sentence.
Yeah.
But I mean, finding her would bring a lot of closure.
Yeah. Especially for the family.
Yeah. Sucks.
So let's go ahead and jump right into overtime. Kylie, what you got for me today?
Okay, I texted Kate an idea I had for overtime yesterday because I was like, if she has anything, she's going to need a minute to think about it. And I gave her an example of one of mine, and you called me a pervert, basically.
All right, you guys, I got it. Can I read the text, Kylie? Is that okay?
Yeah.
So, you guys, yesterday, the day before we record, I get a text from Kylie. Now, this was very nice from Kylie because sometimes she'll say things in overtime and my brain cannot process an answer quick enough of like what I want to say to the public. Like, what do I want the public to know that is a good answer for me? And it takes too long for me to figure out. So yesterday, Kylie was very nice and she goes, no, hi, nothing. She goes, overtime idea for tomorrow. Odd or weird thing on our bucket list. For example, one of mine is to be duct taped to a wall.
Now, let me explain.
Weird. Yeah, that dude, there's something freaky about that, Kylie.
No, it's not sexual, I promise. Mm. But I saw a video online of they're trying to duct tape someone to a wall and with one roll of duct tape to see if they can get one person up with one roll. And then I remembered in elementary school, we had a fundraiser where you could, for $1, you get a piece of tape and you duct tape the principal to the wall. And I remember watching that and the whole time thinking, God, I wish that were me. How fun would it be to hang on the wall like a picture? You've never been stuck on a wall before?
There's nothing intriguing about it. Like, I don't.
I think
it's not a bucket list thing for me.
I just think it's funny and it's something doable I can cross off my bucket list and not many people have done it. I'm like, yeah, I've been duct taped to a wall.
Kylie, if this is seriously something you want to do this, I will help you achieve it next time I see you. I just think that there's something a little weird about it.
I promise it's not weird. I think it's funny to have a picture of me duct taped to a wall. Mm-hmm. Like that's going on my Tinder profile.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sound off in the comments if it's weird.
Yeah. I also want to know, okay, I'm not gonna lie. You sent me this text. And of course, what did I do? I tried my hardest to come up with something. So okay. I was like, what are some weird or odd things on my bucket list? There weren't many. In fact, there were none at all that I could figure out. So I'm visiting my parents right now. So I'm sitting with my parents and I'm like, do you guys have any weird or odd things like on your bucket list? And the only thing I ended up being able to come up with in my head, and you're going to be like, those are normal. Those aren't even fucking weird. I would like to sunbathe nude.
Right.
Like full on nude. Like it's supposed to be very good for certain parts of your body.
What is it called when you show your little butthole to the sun? Perineum tanning or something?
Is that? Apparently, I don't know if I'd spread the cheeks and stand there, but.
Apparently it gives you energy. It charges you.
Well, I will let you know. Okay, if I ever accomplish that. And then my other one is I want to break a world Guinness record.
I love those books. Yes.
I don't know what I want to do it in, but I would like to do one someday.
Would it be something weird like balancing paper clips on your nose, or would it be like a legit one like did the most jumping jacks?
No. It would have to be a weird one because I don't want to have to train for it.
True.
Yeah. And I feel like here's what I was thinking. What if we duct taped you to the wall for the longest time that anyone's ever been duct taped to a wall?
Two birds, one stone.
Boom. Guinness World Record. duct tape to a wall. We can cross those off of our books.
Okay, we'll have to do that. And no one steal our idea because we're doing it.
Shit, I shouldn't have said that out loud.
Okay, if anyone does it, we'll do it for longer.
We'll actually know who you are. We read the books, okay?
I had a couple more. Okay, I want to find a lost dog by chance, randomly, and return it to its owner.
I've done that.
You've done that?
Multiple times.
I've never encountered a lost dog.
All right, next time I'm going to adopt a dog, and before telling you I've adopted it, I'm going to go and set it free near you so that you feel, and then you're going to be like, oh my God, I'm going to take it to its owner at this house, and it's just going to be me.
I would love that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Next thing on my list is, you know, when you, I've only ever seen it online, when you go in a drive through and they're like, oh, the person in front of you paid. Like, do you want to pay for the next person in line? I want to be the person that ends that. And I take my free Starbucks and I leave.
I'm shocked you haven't done that before.
It's never happened to me.
That's why. You've never had somebody pay for your shit?
I guess I look ugly in the car. I don't know.
I've had that many a times.
Damn it.
But I always have to. Here's what happens though, Kylie, is I'm always like, oh, wonderful. Free drink for me. Let me pay for the person behind me. And they're like, oh, okay, that comes out to $52. And I'm like, what? And it turns out it's like a family of six.
Yeah, and they bought 24 cake pops.
Yeah.
I ain't doing that.
Yeah, so.
And hey, I want to be on a plane when a flight attendant goes on the little speaker and asks if there's a doctor on board, and there is.
Kylie, how have you not had these things happen to you?
And don't leave the house.
I've also had that before. But hey, you're usually, just... it's the one, I think I've had it either... once or twice. I can't remember if it, one of them I remember vividly, but it was just like somebody was having an allergic reaction.
It's boring.
Yeah, like it wasn't movie scene attack.
I'm jealous of you right now. Okay, the last one you haven't done, and I'm sure it's also on your list, be called for jury duty.
Okay, I've been called for jury duty and I've never been able to do it because I was like in school or shit, you know, like it was stupid stuff. I want to actually be in a jury
for a juicy case. I don't care if it's murder. I don't care if it's like a weird
body,
a weird lawsuit, slip and fall. If it's juicy, I want to be there.
That, okay, you're so right. That is one of my, I wouldn't say bucket list, I would say life goal. There's a life goal of mine to be in a jury in a good trial. I don't care how long the trial it is either. You can take me away as long as you want. If it's good, I'm in. I won't be biased either.
We have any court clerks listening? We are available.
We are. And we would be very good.
We'd be so good.
Yeah. I'll have to write that one down. That's pretty good.
Moral of the story, Kate's done everything on my bucket list and that makes me really upset, but
I gotta get you out of the house.
That's true.
Yeah. All right. But we have something to look forward to.
We have a lot to do this summer.
Yep. I need to contact Guinness World Record because somebody has to be there for it to happen.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll figure it out.
We'll be planning.
Yeah, we will. We'll keep you guys updated as well. So, all right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. For more information on the case, you can visit us at overmydeadpod.com. Of course, we are on all the socials. Listen to us, subscribe, rate, comment, like, blah blah blah. We love y'all. Keep listening. We want to hear recommendations and give us your overtime thoughts too. So we'll see you next week. Bye
bye.